From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Republicans are finally openly discussing their real rationale for passing a $1.5 trillion deficit-causing tax reform bill to cut spending, namely Social Security and Medicare. Florida Republican Senator Marco Rubio was among the first to say out loud to the press a week ago that, quote, you have to bring spending under control and not discretionary spending. That isn't the driver of our debt. The driver of our debt is the structure of Social Security and Medicare for future beneficiaries. As the federal government's budget deadline of December 8th looms fast, Democrats, who have been left out of all discussions on the tax reform bill, are expected to negotiate with Republicans to avert a government shutdown. During President Obama's tenure, Republicans held the government agencies hostage multiple times over their demands for spending cuts in budget discussions. Joining me is Lindsay Koshgarian. She is the research director at the National Priorities Project. Welcome to the program, Lindsay.
Thanks for having me.
So let's actually begin at the beginning to sort of explain to our audience about what it is that the government, federal government budget spending bill demands. For those who aren't following the intricacies of this, what exactly is this deadline of December 8th? What is Congress expected to do?
Well, the deadline of December 8th comes about because Congress already punted once on the original October 1st deadline to pass a budget for the fiscal year 2018, which is the year that we're in right now. And so we're already a couple of months into fiscal year 2018. Right now, the federal government, the entire federal government, is operating on the same funding levels that they had last year. But Congress is expected to change those by passing a proper budget for this fiscal year. And that's the deadline that's coming up this Friday, December 8th. And the funding that they're looking at for this bill is a little over $1 trillion. That's a one with 12 zeros. And it's funding for everything from the United States military and homeland security to funding for education, funding for science like NASA and the National Institutes for Health, and funding for our veterans, and many other major categories of government funding.
Does it include Medicare and Social Security?
It does not explicitly include Medicare and Social Security. But that said, with the tax plan that they're looking to pass in the next couple of weeks, there are some dire predictions for what could happen to Medicare and Social Security, even if they don't explicitly cut them. Because of the rules, because of a 2010 law that was passed, known as Pay As You Go, there are certain provisions where it kicks in automatic cuts to those programs if Congress spends too much. And this tax plan is going to push them over the edge. And it could end up in something like $25 billion in cuts to Medicare if Congress just does nothing.
So these are supposedly two separate issues, but they do cover spending on government spending, right? So let's just actually stay on the tax bill for just a bit, simply because this is an issue that's running parallel to the budget, government budget discussions. Right now, the Senate has passed it, squeaking by with a tie-breaking vote cast by Mike Pence. And it has to be this version that the Senate passed has to be reconciled with the House version. Is there anything in the discussions that you are seeing that would address the $1.5 trillion of deficits over 10 years that this bill would cause? I'm imagining not, because that's the heart of the 500-page bill.
Yes, there is nothing that would make up for that lost revenue. $1.5 trillion, that's more than the entire discretionary budget for the year. That's more than the amount that Congress will be negotiating for this December 8th Friday deadline. So it's a huge amount of money, and it's just going to make a giant hole in the federal budget. Now, of course, the Republicans who are for this plan are claiming that there's going to be economic growth enough to make up the difference, that the economy will grow so fast that people will owe more taxes even after these cuts, and everything will just work itself out. But even the most conservative studies of this tax plan show that that's not true. At most, they're expected to make up about a third of the tax cuts that they're making, which means they're still left with a $1 trillion hole in the deficit. And again, that's an entire year of federal discretionary spending.
So all of this is based on the assumption that the economy grows when you put more money into the hands of corporations and wealthy elites. It's that discredited idea of trickle-down economics. But past recessions and past tax cuts have shown that they simply pocket the money and park it offshore, and it doesn't necessarily trickle down. Even if they may increase jobs, those jobs aren't well-paying. They're not increasing wages and salaries because they have no incentive to do so.
That's right. And there was this amazing video where a room full of corporate CEOs were asked how many of them would be creating jobs as a result of this, and very few of them raised their hands. Mm-hmm. And a study by my colleague Sarah Anderson at the Institute for Policy Studies, which National Priorities Project is a part of, they looked at the corporate tax rates that were paid by various corporations and found that the corporations that paid the lowest taxes had actually, on average, cut jobs during the years when they were paying some of the lowest tax rates. And what they did with those, the profits from paying a lower tax rate, they funneled them right into CEO pay.
Right. I want to get back into the discussion on the budget, but one last issue on this tax reform bill. And I mentioned Senator Marco Rubio, who was among the first, and now more and more Republicans are basically coming out and saying, oh, yeah, we are going to need to address Social Security and Medicare. Do you agree with the assessment that this was probably their goal all along? That if they had started out saying, let's cut Social Security and Medicare, they realize how unpopular it would have been. Donald Trump had campaigned on not touching Medicare. But now I feel like they think that by turning it around, that no one's going to notice, by first creating a deficit and then saying, now we have to make spending cuts to pay for it, that they think no one's going to notice. And Marco Rubio essentially said that we're going to have to cut Medicare and Social Security. The driver of our debt, he said, is the structure of Social Security and Medicare for future beneficiaries, except we pay into those programs for ourselves, right?
Right. The moniker entitlement program is entirely misapplied to Social Security and Medicare.
Everyone uses it, including the so-called liberal media, such as the New York Times.
Yes, it's true. It's true. These are programs that if you get benefits out, it's because you've spent a lifetime paying into the system, and they're benefits that you've invested in and that you deserve. And I think it's also exactly right that this tax bill was always phase one of at least a two-phase plan. And phase two is that they're going to look for major cuts to these programs that they've never liked. Senator Rubio made comments about it. There was a famous exchange between Senator Bernie Sanders and Senator Patrick Toomey from Pennsylvania, where Sanders demanded that Toomey answer the question of whether this was leading to cuts to Medicare and Social Security, and Senator Toomey refused to answer. And President Trump has begun talking about, he's using another euphemism, he's begun talking about welfare reform. But he's not just talking about cuts to welfare as we know it, which were already ill-advised when they happened in the 90s. But he's talking about cuts to some of the major social welfare programs that we have in this country that people pay into, which are Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid.
This is what his base relies on. And it's just amazing. He and his party have been able to con ordinary Americans who might identify as conservative, who might have voted for him, into electing and supporting the people that are going to be cutting them off financially.
It is amazing. Cuts to these programs are extremely unpopular. And the tax plan that they're passing is about to pass, in all likelihood, is extremely unpopular. That tax plan has an approval rating of only about 25%. And including in some of the states where there have been swing votes of senators who, you know, may or may not have voted for the tax plan, in most of those states, even Republican voters are saying that there are aspects of the plan that they don't believe in. They believe this tax plan is going to benefit the rich and corporations. They believe that the tax plan is not going to benefit ordinary Americans. And Medicare and Social Security are very popular programs in these places too. So it's definitely a question of whether the unpopularity of these things will actually catch up to the members of Congress who are voting for them.
So let's talk about the budget discussions. I mentioned during Obama's tenure, Republicans brought the government to a standstill multiple times, usually right before the holidays. And in a way that they really, I think, understood that they could hold the government hostage. What do you think may play out this time? You said they've already punted the deadline once from October to December. There's some speculation that Republicans are going to be asking Democrats for an extension. But they should have been working on this all along instead of on the tax reform bill, right?
Yes. It just shows where their priorities are. It really does. It shows that their priority is tax cuts for billionaires and corporations, and their priority is not on making sure that government has adequate funds to keep going. They've risked this shutdown that we're now facing once again, and they will probably ask for another couple week extension to get this done, and we'll see whether that comes through or not. But their priority is clear. Their priority is on tax cuts for billionaires and corporations, and they're not that concerned with what else happens, including even paying lip service to the military spending, where Congress approved a massive hike in military spending to $700 billion. But that's in jeopardy, too, by doing this. And you even see Pentagon leaders saying that they need to know what their funding level is for the current year that we're in, because there's no way for government agencies to plan their work or to make investments in America that make sense if they don't know how much funding they have. So it's tremendously irresponsible, and it really shows where their priorities are. And another example of that is their failure to bring back funding for CHIP, which is the Children's Health Insurance Program. There are millions of children in the country that rely on that program for health insurance, and there are states that are already sending out cancellation notices telling families that they're going to have to find new sources of insurance for their children, because Congress has just failed completely to address the funding for this program that expired earlier this fall.
I'm so glad you brought that up. That issue has completely fallen through the cracks. By the way, it said no one. You're seeing very little media coverage of it. I mean, we're talking about the most vulnerable in our society here, the most innocent of all, the Children's Health Insurance Program failing to be fully funded simply because Congress has not gotten around to do its job. And by Congress, of course, we mean the Republican Party, because they hold the majority. Now, what's really interesting is a comment that I saw by Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi last week, when there was the question of whether Democrats would meet with Republican leaders on government spending. One of the things she said was, we need to reach a budget agreement that equally boosts funds for our military and key priorities here at home. There is a bipartisan path forward on all of these items. I was sort of shocked that Pelosi would even mention the military, given that there are things like the Child Health Insurance Program that need fully funding, given that there are programs that ordinary people rely on that are a little bit more important than funding the latest expensive jet for the military.
Well, yes, there are two pieces of that. One is, it's important to remember that the $700 billion package, which is not a law yet, not going to happen yet, but the $700 billion military spending package that was passed by Congress earlier this year was passed on a bipartisan basis. So that's an important piece of reality to remember. As
right.
much as
okay.
progressives may wish, many Democrats are pro-military spending, as much as we may wish the opposite. But the more relevant piece of context for this is the reality that we're living under, which most people know by the name sequestration. And this is a law that was passed in 2011. And what it said was that it made government spending cuts in two major categories, military spending and non-military spending. And in effect, what that has done has meant that every time that Congress wanted to raise spending in either category, military or non-military, meaning everything else, education, science, veterans care, it had to do it on both sides. So every increase that Nancy Pelosi may want on the non-military side for something like the Environmental Protection Agency or something or other programs that she may care about, under the current law and the politics that come from that, will have to be met by an equal spending increase for military spending. And that's something that's sort of locked into law until this law expires in 2021. And it's a dynamic that will be very hard to escape.
Wow. Just amazing how much of our taxes goes towards military spending. And actually, let's put that into perspective. Your organization is the National Priorities Project. And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Lindsay Koshgarian. She's the research director at that organization. So our national priorities, give us a snapshot of what they look like if we examine just the broad outlines of a government budget that is under consideration. Because we tend to miss that aspect when we think about where our taxes go, where federal revenue goes.
Yes. So if we're looking at the $1 trillion spending bill that Congress will or will not pass before this coming Friday, about 53% of that money currently goes to the military. Now, that includes 53%. That includes everything from the wars that are still going on in Iraq and Afghanistan and now expanding to Syria and Yemen and other places. That includes almost about half of the total military discretionary spending goes to for-profit contractors. In 2016, it was $300 billion. It was about half of the military budget that went to for-profit contractors like Lockheed Martin, which got $25 billion from the Department of Defense. And that's more than the entire budget of the Environmental Protection Agency. So this is where this money is going. And under President Trump's proposals, he'd like to take that number from 53% of discretionary spending up to 59% of discretionary spending by raising military spending and cutting spending on everything else.
How do you not tear your hair out in frustration as you study these issues, Lindsay? Because everything you're saying makes my skin crawl, makes my blood pressure rise, as it should to every American who might be aware of these numbers at a time when ordinary people are struggling and corporate profits are booming. We're taking a majority of the money that government gets from us and just throwing it at the military. And how that benefits each and every single one of us on a daily basis, we really can't say.
Right. I think anger can be a healthy emotion, and it's just a question of channeling it into the appropriate places. And National Priorities Project works in coalition with grassroots movements all over the country in order to change these budget realities. And sometimes we know that we may not be able to change them this month or even this year, but we know that in the long haul, we can really make changes.
Let's talk a little bit about the politics of the budget discussions. Republicans are going to need Democrats, right? Even though they have a majority in the House and the Senate, don't they need some Democratic support in order to pass anything?
Yes, they do. So okay. It comes down to fine points of congressional rules, but there's a process that they were able to use for the tax plan where they could get it through the Senate with only 51 votes. But they cannot use that process for passing the budget. So that means that in the Senate, the budget can be filibustered and that Democrats have enough votes to do that. And so that means, yes, in the Senate, they do need Democratic votes to pass this budget. And that is one of the major hopes for Trump's 59% military spending not becoming a reality.
So Democrats do have, finally, some political leverage on this issue, given that they've been completely cut out of the process on other pieces of major legislation, especially, of course, the tax code rewrite, which was the one and only thing that the Republicans have almost achieved, this year. So they cut out Democrats, and now Democrats can turn around and say, well, why should we play ball when you have essentially refused to let us even see the bill we were voting on last Friday in enough time to read it?
Right. And it's a fine line, though. I mean, there's so much attention in the mainstream media to whether Democrats would allow a government shutdown because of the question of who might get the blame if there were a government shutdown. But the other question that doesn't get as much coverage is whether Democrats would allow a shutdown because a shutdown actually hurts Americans. It hurts federal employees who end up going without paychecks during a time of the year when many families are looking and you know, trying to find more funds, not less. And it hurts the economy as well. It was estimated that the last government shutdown cost over $20 billion to the U.S. economy. So there are real reasons why Democrats might not want to allow that, in addition to the question of who might get the blame.
Right, exactly. The Republicans will just turn around and blame Democrats for standing in the way and then put all of those extra expenses on their shoulders. So what could the Democrats insist on and say, you know, we're not going to vote on this unless you put in place certain measures that progressives might value?
Well, the big one, of course, that we're hearing about is a permanent solution for DACA, for the Dreamers, those young adults who were brought here as children, as immigrants from other countries who had no say in the matter and who have since, you know, been going to our schools alongside American citizens, have been going to college, have held jobs, and have been, you know, by all means, productive members of society. America is the only country they've ever known in many cases. And their protection under President Trump's executive order will end in the spring unless Congress takes action. So that is the major piece of a budget puzzle that Democrats allegedly are looking to use their leverage in order to help the Dreamers.
So is the issue of DACA specifically in the budget discussion, or is this just political negotiations and are they looking to separately pass a DREAM Act in exchange for concessions in the budget?
I think some of that is open to debate and negotiation. So it's not as much a question of how it happens as that it happens. But the safest way to do it would be to pass it as part of the budget legislation, because a separate piece of legislation then could run into its own roadblocks. So probably what they'll be doing is looking to pass it as part of the budget negotiation and budget votes. And it's going to be a very tall order, especially since the Trump administration and others have said that they're only going to accept a permanent solution for Dreamers if they can pin other things to it, like funding for a border wall.
So it's possible, or at least theoretically possible, that Democrats could ask for a DACA extension by asking for that to be funded through next year in the budget rather than a separate DREAM Act.
That's right. It's not so much a question of the funding, but it is possible to put non-spending items into a federal budget
right.
bill.
And we've seen that happen before, yeah.
That's right.
So that's one of their big asks. And it's really interesting because a lot of Republicans, including House Majority Leader Paul Ryan, have been very sympathetic verbally to the plight of DACA recipients. And it might be interesting to see them explicitly say, no, we're not going to include this in the budget discussions and you know, say out loud what a lot of people suspect that they've actually been supporting, which is to kick out all immigrants. I mean, essentially, Donald Trump has made it clear, except when you sort of force him to humanize immigrants, that immigrants are not welcome here. And the Dreamers or DACA recipients are among the most sympathetic immigrant characters and immigrants in the United States that it's hard to sort of turn away from by both Republicans and Democrats. So that'll be interesting. What about simply getting the Democrats on board to vote for an extension? How likely is that to happen? And if so, what sort of extension are we looking at?
I think it's quite likely, and I think the most likely thing is that it'll first be an extension of a couple of weeks. They'll probably extend it until right before Christmas and see if they can make a deal during that extra couple of weeks. But we don't know yet. There are some in members of Congress who want to see an extension go through until January because the Christmas deadline most members of Congress want to go home for during the holiday season to their districts, and it presents this artificial deadline for making a deal. But there are others who would like to see that happen more quickly because of how it might affect the pressure to make a deal. So there are people who are sort of thinking that they can get more of what they want by pushing it longer, or more of what they want by having a shorter timeline, and we don't know yet where it's going to end up.
What can ordinary Americans do in this moment? We talked about anger earlier. In the last few minutes of our discussion, I'm wondering if there are openings for Americans to confront their members of Congress. I know a lot of folks have been, furiously making calls around the tax reform bill. There isn't any kind of a recess coming up where congressional representatives will be forced to face their constituents in town hall meetings, will there?
There's nothing like that coming up in the immediate future, and they'll be trying to pass the tax plan before there's a chance to get face-to-face with your member. But there are people who are taking the opportunity to go to their local district office for their member of Congress and confront someone there and take a video of it and put it on the internet. So, it's amazing. The internet gives us so many new ways to kind of interact and to get the word out. And there are people who are being really creative about that. And it's also really important, even for people who live in a blue district, in a district with a member of Congress who's not supporting this tax plan, it's still important to call your member and let them know where you stand and let them know how much passion and anger really is out there about this. Because even it's not just about this one vote. It's about how priorities will be set up next year as Congress, as some members in Congress on the right seek to move on to other damaging priorities, and members on the left have to decide where they're going to play the strongest defense. So it's important still now to make your voice heard, because even if it doesn't make a difference this week, it may still make a difference next year.
Lindsay, I want to thank you so much for joining us as always. Give out a website for the National Priorities Project.
Nationalpriorities.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our website. Thanks so much, Lindsay.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
Lindsay Kashgarian is the research director at National Priorities Project. We've been discussing the federal government budget deadline of December 8th and the parallel discussions around the tax reform bill. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.